Accession number 27202, Colonel James Dowson, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Colonel Dowson?
I was born in Sunderland on the 5th of June 1930.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background? You know.
Yes. My mother was the daughter of a miner in Silksworth. And my father was born in Sunderland. He was initially a shipyard worker. He was an apprentice blacksmith. And when he became a blacksmith, he was born in 1902. And so he was a boy during the First World War. And at the end of the First World War, he was an apprentice blacksmith and did very well. But he saw, when he became a blacksmith, he thought he saw the demise of the decline of the shipyards. And in the out-of-work period, he got a job as a porter in the Royal Infirmary in Sunderland. So when I was born, he was a porter and odd job man at the Royal Infirmary in Sunderland.
Now, was it
which is where he met his my mother, because she, as a miner's daughter, had come down from Silksworth to the Royal Infirmary in Sunderland to work as a maid. And they met there.
And what sort of a upbringing did you have? How many in the family? What sort of social circle?
Me. I was only me. I was an only child. And my father, I remember very early memories of my father was a time that he would be out of work or only on casual work. We lived in Hilton Street in Sunderland, which was a part terraced cottage, bungalow town, no, just one floor. And I can remember him taking a bike out with a platform across the cogwheel with two sacks, which he went and got coal, picked the coal from Riot Beach and brought it back, because that was the only way they could afford coal, getting it free, picking it.
So it was a tough upbringing.
Toughish, yes. I never had any perception of poverty or anything like that. None at all. They always looked after me very well.
So a reasonably happy childhood.
Oh, yes.
Now, what about your education? How did that start?
Right. Primary school was Chester Road Primary School. One of my first and most favourite teachers was Miss Summerbell, lovely name to remember, and they spotted quite early on that I was clever. And when I had measles, they sent books home so that I could continue to learn to read. And they would call at the house and so on, which I thought was quite normal. But in fact, of course, I was privileged. I was picked out as a clever lad. And as I progressed through the school, came to the age of nine, and I was evacuated to Osmotherley in North Yorkshire.
Osmotherley?
Osmotherley. Osmotherly. And that was a lovely year in my life. I spent a year there and then came back.
Now, tell us a bit about it. What were the type of house you were evacuated to?
I can't remember going. The first memory I have of Osmotherley is of being standing beside the billeting officer with another boy called Edwin Brown, and conversation going on that I was paying not an awful lot of attention to, with people who were looking rather unhappy. And this was Elsie Dodsworth, who lived with her father, Fred, in one of the four or five cottages at Walk Mill, which was just about a mile away from Osmotherley. And eventually we were led in through the red stone-flagged passage into the living room and shown a room which went down some steps to one side, because the cottages were on a slope. Walk Mill was an old linen mill, and these were the workers' cottages. And we were billeted there. I discovered later. Elsin, we were billeted. Edwin and I were billeted with the Dodsworths. Actually, they were all Dodsworths in that row of cottages. The entire row of cottages was occupied by Dodsworths of various relationships with each other. And the big house was, as I say, Walk Mill, and the family there were called Beauville. Elizabeth, who was Elsie's sister, worked as a maid in the house. We had a very happy year there. Edwin and I had this sort of urban confrontational relationship that sort of surrogate siblings do, I suppose. And around about, it would be after June 1940, we were invaded by a rushing sound of motorized transport and so on, and the entire Royal Army Service Corps battalion arrived and occupied Walk Mill, billeted themselves. And they were wonderful. There were tents up and there were rifles around. They'd all been evacuated from Dunkirk. So that was a very exciting time.
Now, tell us a bit more about your relationship with the Dodsworths. I mean, how did they treat you, and how
were
you?
They treated us like their children. Uncle Fred, as I called him, worked in the woods on the hills outside Osmotherley, felling timber, and we used to go up there and play among the horses and so on that were dragging the timber out of the woods. And Elsie looked after us, and she looked after Fred, as if we were her children. And we went to school at Osmotherley, walked there every day. It was over a mile.
How did you get on with the local children at the school?
Very well indeed. There was the occasional spat. We were called evacuees and all that sort of thing. But there were lots of urban evacuees in Osmotherley, and by and large, they didn't form factions that I remember. I can remember seeing much more urban children than me from Gateshead and rougher parts of Tyneside. And that was a bit of a revelation there. And also, I remember being very excited about the pursuits of country children, like going and beating the woods for pheasants and stealing things like eggs from chickens' nests, and so keeping pigeons and watching them die as they refuse to feed, and all sorts of things like that. But
do you think it interrupted your education? I mean,
no, I think it probably amplified my education. In education in the broadest terms. Formal education, no. There were two masters, both of them, I think, they weren't from Sunderland. One certainly was from Tyneside. She I didn't get on all that well with. But there was another one. I don't know where he was from. Might have been Tyneside. But he spotted straight away that I was perhaps more than averagely clever, and so he made sure that I was that I didn't go astray, you might say.
Now, was you were obviously a bright lad. Was your intelligence on a broad front, as we say?
Or absolutely.
Absolutely. Or was it concentrated in one place?
We had a flower competition, wildflower competition, and I made friends with one of the locals, whose name I've forgotten, but we used to call Chicken. And we won hands down in no time at all. We'd had all the flowers, and I could remember them all as well. And I think that's, I don't know what intelligence is, but someone has suggested that it's having a very good memory, and I had a very good memory. I could remember things, almost photographic, not quite photographic. I never had any photographic perception of what I was remembering. It was just raw memory. It ran out in a great string. And if someone recited something, I did this at school once. I didn't do my homework. I didn't learn a poem. Somebody stood up and recited it. I was waiting to get the stick and the master, being a bit of a sadist, I suppose, invited me to have a go, and I recited it word for word. And there was a long pause, which at that time I didn't understand. And he said, "All right, Dawson, sit down."
So you were good at all the things like history and geography, which are fundamentally memory.
No
what,
problem.
What about maths and that? And
just average, I think. I used to get excited about certain ideas in mathematics, and still do. But I don't remember them. I can't manipulate them as the way mathematicians can. Not very much innovative about my intelligence.
So what about the other side, like sport, things like that? Were you interested in sport?
Just about average.
Did you enjoy it, though?
I enjoyed it, yes. But I didn't shine at it. I longed to get into one of the school teams when I went to grammar school, and eventually did, but it was hard.
I'll come back to the grammar school. Mm. Now, what about these Royal Army Service Corps?
They all arrived.
Tell us about your relationship with them and how they treated the local kids.
Well, they were billeted on Walk Mill. There's probably a battalion of them, I would think. Whatever size. It was a biggish unit, and they were spread all over Walk Mill, and they were friendly and impressive. People were. The local people were curious, but the soldiers themselves were very welcoming. And I can remember we had when it was. I'm just trying to think. They came in the summer. It would be the first winter. Yes, first winter. The locals all came down and they had sort of, you know, social gatherings down at Walk Mill. The soldiers were made themselves at home. I remember also, there was a blacksmith shop next door to where we lived. These cottages, some of the backs of them were workshops. And the blacksmith shop was out of the other side of our house, and the one off to the left. Above were granaries, which I don't think they were full at the time. They were, certainly, but there were, you know, lots of scratchings, the rodents, and things like that. I remember hearing that. But the blacksmith shop, the soldiers went into it and started making things. The one thing that they were making were Lewis gun stands. Yes, they still had Lewis guns in those days. And my father, who came to visit me, as I told you, was a blacksmith, an industrial blacksmith. He watched them, I can remember, until he couldn't stand it any longer, and eventually marched in and said, "Look, I'll just show you how to handle metal," or similar words. And he then impressed me immensely, because I'd never seen him do this. He was operating the bellows, working the anvil, using the hammer, and he made a chain link, which I kept for a long time, out of piece of just a rod of metal. He made a chain link with a natural welding, no welding machine, just with a hammer and hot metal. And he made this chain link, almost perfect looking chain link, and then helped them to complete their Lewis gun stands. They were, like me, duly impressed. And I still remember it, just watching him operate a hammer that I could hardly lift with one hand.
And the soldiers behaved themselves during their time?
Absolutely.
As far as
I was aware, there were never any poor relations with the soldiers. Quite the opposite. They were warmly welcomed, and they respected that welcome. Now, they helped in the harvest, I remember. They joined, you know, harvest being very labour-intensive work, they joined in when they could. I mean, they had nothing else to do, clean their rifles, laze around, but they joined in the harvest.
Did they tell you anything about what had happened to them?
Not at all. Not a single, I have no memory of them telling me. It wasn't until a long time later that I realised that they had been evacuated in an emergency basis from Dunkirk and rushed into accommodation that didn't exist when they hit the UK. They had to find places for soldiers, and this was done at the very last minute. they moved into this old linen mill and transformed it, cookhouses and all the rest of it. It was really most impressive.
Now, how long were you at Osmond, well, Hawk Mill?
A year.
So from 39 through to?
40, let's see.
When did you come
41.
Back?
I think it must have been Christmas 41 that I came back.
And you'd gone in September 39, I do.
Yep, yeah, that's right.
So, now, how did you feel? Did you suffer from homesickness at all? I should have asked that earlier, but let's just top and tail it with that. I mean, were you homesick?
Not a lot. I never have been. You know, I don't suffer very much from homesickness. I didn't then. I remember being excited about it. And I remember writing home, sitting at the table with an oil lamp. That was all, no electricity. We used to go up every week with accumulators, as they called them, little lead acid batteries, and used to walk a mile up to the up to the village with these lead acid batteries and exchange them for two more fresh ones and bring them all down. That's the only communication we had with the outside world in terms of technology, was battery-driven wireless. Sorry, I was going to call them a radio then.
And so you didn't, I mean, did your parents visit you regularly?
They visited after an interval. It wasn't all that far. They could get the bus to Stockton, change the bus and get the bus from Stockton to North Allerton and stop off on the way. So they visited, and they must have visited about three or four times, I suppose.
Not that often then, in 2 years.
Yes.
That's probably 2 years. Well, a year and a half.
Not more than four times, though. I remember them visiting in the winter, because we had a dog then, and the winter of 1939-40 was very long and lots of deep snow. And it snowed and snowed on snow, so it was way above my head. And I remember the dog plunging into these snowdrifts and thoroughly enjoying himself. So they visited once during the winter. And I remember also they visited once during the summer after the troops arrived from Dunkirk, because my father was there, and probably once more. So no more than three times.
Now, how did you feel when you went back to Sunderland? Because, it's a very different environment.
Yeah. I just fit in very quickly. I can remember when I got home, having decided that I would, having been decided that I would come home.
Now, what was the basis of that? Who decided what and why?
I think it was fairly mutual. I was happy enough to come home. My parents very much wanted me home. I suppose the war had been fairly quiet. There hadn't been very much local danger. So the absence of local danger persuaded them that evacuation wasn't such a good thing, and they missed me, and they wanted me to come home, so came home. And the thing I was going to tell you about, I'd got home, and I can remember I was getting undressed for bed, and my parents were both staring at me, looking at me, as if somehow or other they'd something they'd lost, they'd found again, and they were sort of looking, is it real? It's come back. As me as an object rather than me as a... They were just sort of fascinated by the fact that all these things that they'd lost perception or had come back, and there I was at home.
Now, what about your school? I mean, would this be when you went to the grammar school, when you got back?
No, I'd be 10, you see, in a very short time, I took the 11 plus, as it's now called. It was called a scholarship at that time. And I went back to Chester Road School. And once again, various masters would call around the house to make sure I wasn't going to make mistakes about my education. I remember Mr. Thompson, I don't know anything more about him anymore, except that he had a moustache and it was very strict. And I was very wary of him at school, but surprised to find him calling around at the house to inquire about me. But what he was making sure was that I took the scholarship examination and went to grammar school.
and that's what you did?
I did, yes.
And which grammar school was that?
That was Bede Grammar School. It was at that time called the Bede Collegiate School for Boys. There was a twin school on the other side called the Bede Collegiate School for Girls, and it later became the grammar school.
And what kind of an education did you get there? I mean, how good a school was it?
It was I suppose the best school in Sunderland, really. It was regarded as the one where people went when they wanted a good education. It was the usual sort of standard of high standard of English, classics, history, languages. Complete and modelled on the English public school system. They'd only just stopped the accelerated system. They were transferring over to a more egalitarian system where the accelerated business of what's it called, remove and so on, those forms. You could do a 5-year course in 4 years, as it were, whatever length it was. It was a year shorter because you could do it, and they stopped that, and everyone had to go at the same pace. That was the first, round about the first year that.
And what subjects did you specialise in or do best in?
Best would be a natural history subject, biology, and science subjects, but not maths, as I say, very average in maths.
And so you'd be there from 1941?
1941 until 1948, when, 49, April 49, left school, went into national service.
And you did well at school, obviously.
Yes, and always top or second in class.
And what about your perceptions of the war as you grew older, you know, because when you were 9 and 10, I presume you didn't think that much about it. As you grew older, what did you think about the war? How much did it affect you, do you think?
Well,
did you follow it, you know, the progress?
I suppose I did, yes. We used to get things like a picture post and so on, not very much in the way of newspapers that I remember, but I can remember the picture post, and I can remember the Russians coming into the war and looking with wonder and admiration at the Russians, which were very highly propagandized. I remember thinking that all Germans were terrible villains and not to be trusted and better off dead and all that sort of thing. And so killing Germans seemed to me to be a very worthy pursuit. And the more people who did it, the better. So there was that kind of patriot, I suppose. I did have experience of the war in the sense that Sunderland got one or two hefty bombings when I was there after I'd come back.
Now, what do you remember of that?
I can remember the house shaking as a bomb fell two doors away. It was so quiet that we used to sleep in our own beds, and that night, my father got me up, and I remember we were in the living room, and there was this huge crump, and the house seemed to bounce, and it was a bomb that fell two doors away and demolished the house. From that time on, we slept in the shelter, and the shelter, we didn't have a shelter ourselves, we had to use next door's shelter, Mrs. McIntosh's, which was crowded and jolly and cosy and fun.
Now, what type of...
It was shelter? A surface shelter.
An Anderson?
No, a surface brick shelter.
Oh, tell us about it, because you never seem to hear about them. Tell us
right.
About what it was like.
There were two grades of brick shelter. There was one that was built in people's yards and so on. It was very stoutly built of brick, reinforced concrete roof, and it was biggish. 1, 2, 3, 4. You'd probably sleep about 6. And
was that in bunks or
bunks? Yes, in bunks on each side, and it had a baffle entrance. It was well constructed, and we used to spend
concrete roof? Or?
Yes, concrete roof. It was a reinforced concrete roof. Really quite substantial, I remember.
Would it have stopped a bomb?
No.
But it would have stopped...
If a house had fallen on it, it probably would have survived.
So it was it was for near misses rather than direct hits.
That's right. In fact, there were, during that time when we were sleeping in the shelters, a colleague of my father's was killed precisely because of that. The shelter received a direct hit and they were all annihilated.
Now, what was it like? There was just you and Mrs. McIntosh's family. Your family and Mrs. McIntosh's. That's who was in it, was it? Or were there any other?
No one else, no.
And what was it like? You said it was jolly. In what way, jolly?
Well, we used to chat and we'd sing songs as well. I don't know that we had a wireless in it. Don't think we did, no. Anyway, there probably wouldn't be anything on during that time of night. It was during the night. And we sort of slowly drifted off to sleep and then got up in the morning. People would go out and have a look to see what was going on. And usually there would be searchlights and the wallop of anti-aircraft fire and occasional scratching noise as shrapnel fell. And we'd go out and pick up bits of shrapnel. We didn't stay huddled together and, trembling with fear or anything. It was really quite a relaxed evening, a social evening, which we were obliged to do because of circumstances. But everyone got on well, as far as I remember, and as long as it lasted. We got a shelter after that, which was another brick shelter. And that was much inferior construction.
In what way? How
was that? Well, I can remember you could actually... Between the bricks, there was supposed to be mortar. And whereas you couldn't actually penetrate the mortar even with a hammer and chisel on the Mrs. McIntosh's shelter, I could poke my finger into the stuff between the bricks and our shelter. It was a mock shelter, I think. They took down our greenhouse... We had a small yard in which was a shed, a greenhouse, a washhouse, and a lavatory, and a standpipe. And they took the greenhouse away and put this shelter, which was tiny. It would occupy, it would sleep the three of us just. But it didn't have anything like a baffled door or anything, and it was quite small, and it was made of inferior brick and inferior mortar.
And the roof?
It was a flat roof, and I can't remember much about it.
That would be concrete as well.
It would be concrete, yes.
It sounds like you'd be better off in the house.
Oh, yes. We never used it. We used it as a sort of thing for the bits of stuff that we had that wouldn't go in the wash house or the shed.
So would you still go to Mrs. McIntosh's?
Yes, we did. Until the danger seemed to pass. I think the reason we stopped would be because the air raid stopped, and then there was the cautious tail end where we'd go into the shelter every night and there'd be no raids, and after a week or two we'd stop altogether. But it sort of dwindled by attrition rather than by any positive decision.